Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited Q1 FY17 results conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Inba. Welcome to Glenmark's Q1 earnings call. We'll start with the review of the operations. For the first quarter ended June 30, 2016, Glenmark's revenue was at $19.30 million, recording an increase of 17.92%. India, the sales for the formulation business in India for the first quarter was at $5,137.66 million, recording growth of 10.39%. As per IMS June 2016, Glenmark maintained its rank at 17th as compared to MAT June 2015, with increase in market share by 0.10%, exhibiting value growth of 18% vis-à-vis IPM growth of 12%. The India business strengthened itself across therapeutic areas, namely the cardiac segment, the respiratory segment, and the derma segment. During the quarter, Glenmark launched Digihaler, India's first digital dose inhaler, pan-India. Digihaler is the next inhaler which provides accurate digital dose counters along with low-dose warning indicators to enable asthma and chronic COPD patients to track adherence to their therapy. Digihaler addresses the issue of pseudo-adherence and tail-off phenomenon, which leads to poor outcome of the therapy. U.S. formulations. Glenmark USA registered revenue from the sale of finished dose formulations was at $6,981 million, recording an increase of 24.44%. In the first quarter of the fiscal year, Glenmark was granted five approvals, which is two final approvals and three tentative approvals. During the quarter, Glenmark filed four ANDA applications with the U.S. FDA. In the next quarter, Glenmark intends to file five ANDA applications with the FDA. Africa, Asia, and CIS region. For the first quarter, revenue from this region was at $1,949 million, recording an increase of 23.35%. In the first quarter of the financial year, Glenmark's Russia secondary sales growth was at 59% vis-à-vis the same period last year. For the first quarter of FY 2017, the average depreciation of the ruble was 20% compared to the corresponding quarter. For this quarter, the constant currency growth for the Russia business was in excess of 50%. As per IMS MAT 2016, in the dermatology segment, Glenmark grew by 35.5%. One of the reasons for the good growth has been the launch of Oclomil Nail Lacquer, which has gained good traction across the country. The launch of Momate Rhino Advanced Nasal Spray, which was launched recently, continues to gain good momentum across the country and has helped us further strengthen our presence in the respiratory area. The Asia business recorded secondary sales growth of 16% during the quarter. The subsidiaries of Malaysia, Philippines, and Vietnam recorded secondary sales growth of 38%, 15%, and 56% respectively. The Africa business also performed well during the quarter. Europe formulations. Glenmark's Europe operations revenue was at $1,499.53 million, recording growth of 36.50%. The U.K. business recorded growing strongly in excess of 100% during the quarter. The German subsidiary recorded a good performance and won several tenders during the quarter. The consistent good performance of the German subsidiary has enabled it to rank among the top 15 generic companies in the country. Glenmark has launched several new products in the region. The growth for the European region has been primarily driven by the Western Europe business. Latin America. Glenmark's revenue from its Latin America business was $1,556 million, recording a decrease of 28.77%. During the quarter, Venezuela subsidiary sales dropped significantly as compared to the previous corresponding quarter. The Brazil and Mexico subsidiary also did not perform as per expectations. We expect LATAM business ex Venezuela to pick up in the remaining part of the year. API. Revenue of API in regulated and semi-regulated markets was at $1,912 million, recording an increase of 41.71%. Glenmark filed two U.S. DMFs during the quarter. The good growth was contributed by the sale of Canagliflozin domestic market and Olmesartan the U.S. market. R&D. GRC-17536, a TRPA1 antagonist, has proven highly efficacious in treating inflammatory and neuropathic pain in animal models. GRC-17536 has shown positive data in a phase 2A proof of concept study in patients with painful diabetic neuropathy, including Europe and India. Phase 2 enabling toxicology studies have been completed, and 17536 has shown good safety profile supporting further development. Glenmark has submitted an IND for a phase 2B dose range finding study. The agency has requested additional information to some changes in the clinical protocol. Glenmark's NCE-27864, a potent selective and orally bioavailable indicator of MPGS1, a novel therapeutic target in pain management which is upregulated under inflammatory conditions. Glenmark has successfully completed preclinical studies and a phase 1 enabling toxicity studies for GRC-27864. A phase 1 first-in-human single ascending dose and multiple ascending dose study has been completed in the UK with no safety concerns. Batelizumab, GBR500, a monoclonal antibody, is an antagonist of the VLA2 integrin. GBR500 had been licensed to Sanofi for testing of multiple sclerosis in a phase 2 clinical studies. Sanofi had made the decision not to pursue Batelizumab. The decision is not due to safety concerns. Glenmark will continue to pursue the relicensing of GBR500 after it is returned from Sanofi. The termination of the contract has become effective in Q1 FY17 and Glenmark is now free to pursue the relicensing of GBR500. GBR900 licensed the exclusive, Glenmark licensed the exclusive intellectual property rights for the monoclonal antibodies against the neuronal growth factor TRK from Leyline Genomics, Italy. TRK is part of the NGF TRK axis, a validated and novel pain receptor for treatment of chronic pain. Phase 1 enabling toxicity studies for GBR900 have been completed. A phase 1 clinical trial has been initiated in the UK. GBR900 is the first anti-TRK monoclonal antibody to enter clinical development. GBR830, the first anti-OX40 monoclonal antibody, was discovered at Glenmark's research center in Switzerland. The development of OX40 antagonist has been challenging and Glenmark has achieved a significant milestone with the successful generation of an antagonist OX40 monoclonal antibody coupled with generation of data validating the role of OX40 in autoimmune diseases. GBR30 has completed a clinical phase 1 study in dosing successfully in the Netherlands. GBR830 was well tolerated and its safety and pharmacokinetic profile in healthy volunteers fully support a transition into the clinical phase 2 studies. Glenmark has an open IND at the US FDA and Health Canada approval, under which a phase 2 study in atopic dermatitis is currently ongoing. GBR1302, a HER2 CD3 bispecific antibody, is the first clinical candidate based on Glenmark's proprietary best-in-class BEAT platform, and also GBR1302 is Glenmark's first clinical candidate targeting oncology indications. The BEAT antibody technology platform facilitates the efficient development and manufacturing of antibodies with dual specificities called bispecific antibodies. GBR1302 antibody has successfully completed the preclinical evaluation phase. In preclinics, GBR1302 has demonstrated superiority over current antibody therapies against most HER2-positive cancers. Dosing of patients has been successfully initiated and the antibody has been well tolerated. If confirmed in clinical trials, GBR1302 could constitute an innovative treatment for HER2-positive cancers. GBR1342, a CD38, CD3 bispecific antibody based on Glenmark's proprietary BEAT platform. GBR1342 is the second clinical development candidate based on the BEAT technology. It is also Glenmark's second clinical candidate targeting oncology indications. GBR1342 targets CD38, a target for multiple myeloma and potential other malignancies of hematopoietic origin. Glenmark has initiated IND-enabling studies for GBR1342 and is committed to moving GBR1342 rapidly into clinical trials. Before I introduce the management on the call, I would just like to state out a few numbers out there. Gross debt for the company as on June 30th is 4268 crores. Cash is 895 crores. Net debt is 3373 crores. MTM impact on loans is 86 crores. Forex gain recorded in other incomes is 70 crores. Inventory is at 1725 crores, receivables at 2590 crores and payables at 1950 crores. Asset addition during the first quarter was at 180 crores. R&D expenditure is at 198 crores, which is at 10.19% to sales vis-a-vis 170 crores in the Q1 of the previous year. Other revenue reported, which is 39 crores, pertains to export incentives. With that, I would like to introduce Glenmark's management on the call. We have with us Mr. Glenn Saldanha, Chairman and Managing Director, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited; Mr. Rajesh Desai, Executive Director of Finance and IT. We have Mr. P. Ganesh, who is President and Chief Financial Officer, Glenmark Pharmaceuticals. We also have on call Bob Maxick, President, Global America, President America. With that, we can open the floor for questions. Over to you, Inba.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are also requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal of Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. First question is on the U.S. business. Now, we saw some 10 approvals in Q4 and we got a couple of approvals. So how many products have been launched, and this 18% growth that we are seeing dollar terms, do we see this accelerating in the base business?
Yeah, we saw strong volume on the base business, and like you mentioned, the new approvals really helped to increase our top line as well.
Yeah, but do we expect, all of these products have been launched now, and do we expect this run rate to improve in terms of growth?
We continue to project 15 to 20% growth top line.
So Prakash, Q2 we anticipate will be even better than Q1, right? On account of, Crestor and generic Crestor and some of the other launches that we've recently seen. We anticipate a stronger second quarter than even Q1. So I think the U.S. business continues to do exceedingly well for us.
Okay, and could you give some color on the mupirocin opportunity? Does the low competition benefit still helps us?
Yeah, we're still seeing it. It's still doing well.
Okay, and building on the Crestor, as you rightly said, is already there for this Q2. How's the competitive landscape there? What kind of pricing erosion you have seen?
Well, at 180 days, everybody launches at the same time. So there's 6-7 players. But, for now, we've launched at a significant discount, obviously, to the brand, but pricing right now is stable.
So could we assume that 6-7 players, about 90% kind of price erosion, is a fair thing to look at?
Yeah,
that's fair.
The price erosion is significant, right?
Okay, thanks. And my second question is on the recent, $170 million, the bond that we raised. How should we look at in terms of interest cost and,
I think interest cost will really come down, right, on account of the 2% coupon as far as the convertible goes. But I think it'll reflect from maybe Q2 or Q3 onwards, right?
And this largely replaces our old loan, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, and lastly, on the Europe business, how far we are in terms of launching our inhaler portfolio?
So our perspective is the first set of launches should happen, closer to the end of this month. Mainly in the Nordic countries, right? As far as the Ceylon product goes. And I think the balance will all come in next year.
Okay, and these, if you could just highlight broad level market opportunity.
Prakash, we'll take this as the last question. Now. We have a long queue.
Sure.
So market opportunity, look, it's a $700-800 million market, right, in our markets, right? All put together, right? So it could be pretty significant for us, right, in the years to come. I mean, this year we don't anticipate significant sales, but I think starting next year you could see some significant sales on account of the Ceylon product.
Sure, thanks. I'll be in the queue.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Neha Manpuria of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question, sir. So first on the U.S. business, while I understand that you mentioned volume has been good, could you give us some color on pricing, particularly on the derma portfolio that we have?
So, I mean, the derm portfolio, Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, just overall, you know, we're seeing price erosion in the neighborhood of a little bit above 10%. It's picked up a bit. But, Glenn, I don't know if you want to comment specifically on derm.
I think derm has been relatively stable, much more stable than some of the oral solids.
Okay, got it. And second on our, LATAM business, I understand that Venezuela has declined. How much of Venezuela still, exists in the LATAM business? And should we see this declining further from here, or it'll probably remain at this level? And what is the amount that is pending to be repatriated?
I mean, look, Venezuela for us at the EBITDA level has zero contribution,
okay,
to the EBITDA, right?
Okay.
So whatever sales are there, right, is very small, and that's mainly to cover whatever existing expenses, right, in the Venezuelan geography.
And what's the amount that is pending? Were we able to repatriate anything in the quarter?
No, we've not got any flows from Venezuela.
Okay. And my last question is on the Europe business. I understand that we've launched some products incrementally, but and there is seasonality associated with the business, but it is a strong year-on-year growth. So when we look at growth for the Europe business, how should we, is the 30-40% number sustainable, growth number sustainable, or is there a one-off component in this quarter related to some tenders, etc.?
So clearly this number is not sustainable for Europe, right? I mean, on a full year basis, this year we think Europe will finish anywhere from closer to maybe 15%, right? I mean, that's what we anticipate. So I think going forward, right, we don't see this sustaining very clearly.
And what led to the lumpiness in this quarter, sir? Was it related to some tenders, etc.?
That's correct.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. A reminder to our participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Ashish Rathi of Encina Finance. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, sir. Question in particular to the balance sheet. Sir, we have around foreign currency translation reserve sitting on the balance sheet, which is a sizable figure, and it has been built over the years in the balance sheet. The amount, I guess, in March reported numbers around negative 1143 crores. Could you help us understand what this amount is created on account of?
So I think, Ashish, we've said, over the last several years, there have been three areas which we have been hit significantly. One is if you look at emerging market currencies, they have depreciated significantly. This business was close to about 35% 3 years back. This business now is down 22%. Now it is, next year it will be down to 17%. Second is that the US dollar business did not increase over the last 3 years. And the third clearly is that there has been dollar debt on our balance sheet for the last several years, and the rupee has also depreciated significantly. All these three have primarily resulted in the creation of the FCTR. However, you should note that in this year, the FCTR has begun to turn positive. And over the next 3 years, if the US dollar business will do the way we are expected, we expect a lot of it to get turned back and reversed. And you're already seeing the impact of it in the first quarter itself.
And also just to add, while LATAM business has become relatively smaller, some of the LATAM currencies have also started bouncing back.
And if we'll take the loan debt number, if we'll take 3 years back, the 14-15, US INR rate was 54, and now it is March 16, 67. So alone currency, this impact was 650 crore out of this. That is what the substantial this contributed to the FCTR.
Right. So in that case, we would also be having assets which would be benefiting against the depreciation, right?
Switzerland is this. We are accounting as our functional currency is USD. So whatever FCTR is sitting in the this, it is getting down from the reserves. So while converting the this, say translating the Swiss accounts into consolidated accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And it is given under this. If you study our 212 statement published in the annual report, so the past three annual reports will give you these numbers.
So ideally, the emerging markets, what we have in terms of receivables, there we are getting a hit is what you are highlighting, right?
We mentioned the three.
Is that the hit because of receivables in the emerging markets, or what is it the hit for? The receivables getting translated into a foreign currency loss is what we are taking into the reserves.
Say what is happening? The local currencies are this showing deterioration against the USD, and then this when it is getting converted in rupee, it is this double impact is this coming. So that is what the one of the factor also in this.
It's basically the translation impact.
Yeah.
Okay. The only point is, should it be not taken to the P&L? Is it not more a prudent way to do it?
No, it is not this. Under IFRS, it will get accounted as a FCTR only.
I'm talking of the previous years as well. So, anyways.
What is the question, Ashish? Let's stick to the question.
Yeah, next question I'll come to. I'll clarify this later of the call in. Second is on the intangibles bit. I think, Glenn, you've been indicating that the intangibles are supposed to come off and they'll be, you know, I guess we'd increase the amortization run rate also significantly like 2 years back. But if I look at again the last 2 years, the intangibles actually not come off. In fact, they've increased. So what is the, path forward for how do we look at the intangibles number on the balance sheet going ahead? And also in terms of Europe, I guess the reason you said it will come down is because you'll see less of in-licensing of molecules for the US for the Europe business, which is primary contribution to the intangibles creation. But I still see a lot of in-licensing news on the European front.
I think the intangible piece, we've always said that, look, the European business has been built on in-licensing, right?
Yeah.
Always guided towards in-licensing of products. We continue to in-license products. Last year, we in-licensed Celon's product, right? For the European market, where we will see the revenues come in this year. There's no other way of treating this, right? So I don't know where this is coming from, but the fact of the matter remains the intangible block is building because we are doing in-licensing and we are acquiring intellectual property. On the back of that, you're seeing the intangibles increase. So, and as far as amortization goes, I think we have already accelerated amortization. We've already done that, right?
Right. Glenn, please correct me if I'm wrong. Earlier you had said that we would see more of our own product launches in the Europe than in licensing, because we are initially building the business, so we had in-licensed a lot of molecules, which had led to creation of the intangibles. And going ahead, we were going to see our own launches. Is that not happening?
No, it's not, because our R&D resources are primarily focused on the US market, and that's where we think the payback on the US market is much greater than Europe. So, strategically, we feel at this point it's better to focus on the US market.
And Ashish, you're aware of the regulatory framework in Europe where you can, license a product, acquire a product dossier from one country to another country, which possibly cannot happen in any other part of the world.
I think we should move on. Just
yeah. Take the next
maybe
question.
We can come back in the queue.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Fine.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Deep Master of Enam Holdings. Please go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. I just wanted to ask you on the employee cost, there's been a rise year on year of about 30%. So could you just share some more light on that?
Yeah, the employee cost increases primarily on account of, we are right now in this mode of, so there are a number of resources we've added on the R&D side, right, to help us move up the value chain. So it's primarily on account of the employees who have been added to the company on the R&D side.
Got it. So this number will sustain going forward. There's no one-off in the employee cost.
No. No one-off.
Okay. And secondly, in the U.S. market, so Perrigo recently made some comments on pricing erosion and pressures in derm, on the derm side. So you are not seeing any such pressures?
Look, pricing erosion is everywhere, right?
Yeah.
That's just the reality. It's much less on the derm compared to the oral solids.
Right. And, many companies have been able to see volume gains despite price erosion. So is that a trend you're seeing in any part of your portfolio in the U.S.?
Yeah, so we primarily, Bob, feel free to jump in. But
yes.
But.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in general, we're seeing strong demand. I mean, both on the orals, solids, as well as the derm products.
Okay. All right, I can take it up later. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Sameer Baisiwala of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Good afternoon, everyone. Jason, unless I heard you incorrect, you said the net debt was 33.7 billion rupees, was it?
Correct, 3373 crores.
And versus 31, which was March ending?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, and the FCCB amount, did you not get in this quarter? And is this accounted for?
No.
FCCB amount, we received on 29 June and it remains in the cash. So which is not this. So we are not considering here. So.
Sorry, so should your net debt be not adjusted for this 170, $200 million?
So in these numbers, the 170 million of FCCB is not taken.
Is not taken because that is cash is also
not, it is not considered at all, sir.
And why should you not consider it?
Because the transaction formally closed at the kind of at the end at June 30th. They were going into the first week of July. So as a result, the entire impact of the FCCB transaction will be seen on the September 30th result.
And in any case, it doesn't affect the net debt because it was received on 29th and held in cash.
Correct.
Okay, but I think it should impact your net debt, no? So if you
net debt will not get impacted because debt and equivalent cash is there. So we have not utilized cash.
No, your net debt is gross debt minus cash.
Correct.
If you consider this $170 million, then net debt should come down, no?
No, so if you consider this, your gross debt goes up and your cash also goes up. Net debt remains the same.
Oh, I see, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, I see, I see. It's only on conversion will it be taken over. Oh, I see. Okay, got you. My mistake. Okay. And the second is on Crestor. Glenn, my understanding is that price has fallen something like 97%, you know, so it has become a very small market. Do you still think it's interesting enough to bump up your Q2? And my guess is it was probably Denmark which was driving the prices down.
So, Sameer, you don't expect me to comment on your last point, right? That it was us driving the prices down because every competitor will say the same thing to you, right?
Okay.
As far as the market itself, obviously it's extremely genericized. There's no question about it. But we've got some good market share on Crestor, which is playing out in Q2. But again, Crestor is just one among the many products that we got approvals on, right? And we got potassium chloride, we got tea ointment, we got tea cream, and we anticipate some more approvals coming through in second quarter. So we feel pretty good about this quarter.
Okay, and on potassium chloride specifically, have you launched it or is it going to take time for you to get in the market?
So on potassium chloride, we are launching it in second quarter, but the real ramp up, it will take us some time to build capacities to get to the optimal level.
Okay.
So initially the market shares will be small, but over time we will get to a certain... once the capacities are ready, that's when we will have, the appropriate market share.
Okay, and that's how many months away?
My guess is around six to nine months away.
Okay, yeah, that's all from my side. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants to ask a question, you may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Anubhav Agarwal of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Glenn, one question on the U.S. sales. We've shown an impressive increase even versus the March quarter. So we are almost up 8% in the U.S. Just one question that if you were to just very broadly separate into the contribution from the new products versus the higher volume or market share gains in the base products, which would have been a predominant driver of this increase?
Bob, you have any ideas?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it's obviously a mix of both, and it all depends how far you want to go back in terms of new product approvals. But, you know, at any given time, I think somewhere in the range of like 20% would be new product approvals. And then the remaining balance would be just internal demand or base business volume growth. Obviously knocked down a bit because of price erosion.
But Bob, I'm talking more like sequentially, because that much growth sequentially in the base business will only come with price erosion, right?
Yeah, you know, we consider new products back for a year, so in that time frame. So if you're going to say sequentially quarter over quarter, the vast majority of that growth is going to come from the base business.
And just understanding that further, so if base business would have been a bigger driver of that, just want to make sure that, you know, we have seen a trend with other companies where the growth in the base business, the higher market share of quarter over quarter, especially for last two quarters, have come at the cost of margins for most of the players. Would that be a case for us as well?
I mean, directionally, you know, margins, you know, are going to come down a little bit, but, I mean, the, you know, we've more than made up for that in terms of market share.
Okay, that's helpful. Just one question, Mr. Desai, on export incentives of 39 crore, is this, how should I look at it? If I take a total sales minus India minus API, other companies typically get about 2.5% to 3% of that as the export incentives. Is that the way to read it?
Yeah, it is 3% to the export, but then you will not get that this correct calculation from the details we have given, because export incentives is linked with the India supply to various markets.
Okay, of course. And but do you expect now, because the export incentive number that we reported in this quarter is much higher than the run rate for FY16 that we reported in the last March quarter?
Not really. If you see the March quarter, we accounted for entire year. Okay. If you see this, yeah, for the this will be sustainable, I think. So if our this supply will continue, and by and large, we will get around that this multiply by 3 to 4 times what we have. That is what we are estimating.
But Mr. Desai, what you reported in fourth quarter was almost like 80-85 crore number, or 80-90 crore number, and this quarter we reported 40 crore as export incentives. That's exactly what my question was, that what has changed versus March quarter, which was accounted for full year versus now? What's driving delta?
If you look at the standalone numbers and profit, you will get the answer. You know, standalone, okay. Yeah.
Understood. And Glenn, a couple of questions for you. One is just a question on the out-licensing deals on our innovative business. Is the trend, I just wanted to understand, and this question is both, you know, separate question on the chemical as well as the biologic. Earlier, we have out-licensed many molecules before phase 2. Of course, the choice was with us whether we want to out-license before phase 2, take a lower reward for lower risk or higher reward, higher risk. But from a customer perspective, do you clearly see a trend now that this business model now is inherently shifted towards a higher risk, higher reward model?
Yeah,
where the customer wants to take molecules, especially for chemicals, only after phase two?
Well, I think that's absolutely the case, Anubhav, in today's world, right? I mean, I guess most people want to pass on the risk onto you unless the research you're doing is so novel, right, and so exciting that people really want to get into that space, right? So from that perspective, you're absolutely right. Most people want, and not necessarily phase two. See, I think the mistake you're making in some of these cases, right, we are directly running patient trials. So it's safety and efficacy, right? If you can demonstrate safety, right, which you get in a phase one, and efficacy normally in a phase two, but for oncology, it's phase one, okay? Because you're directly going into patients. That's when some of these assets become exciting as far as oncology goes. Some of the other spaces, you're right, it'll be a phase 2A before which some of these compounds become really exciting.
So especially for us, for biologics, when we do, in the past you mentioned a biomarker test, for example, when we do test for efficacy in phase 1, so you're saying for biologics, still out-licensing after phase 1 when we've done proof of concept kind of or efficacy test, it's still possible to out-license, but for chemicals largely, it will be phase 2. Would that be simple understanding?
Yeah, I think for chemicals, you're right. Most people won't do chemical deals before phase 2. So, Anubhav, biologics is a broad term, right? Because, I mean, if you have a very exciting oncology product, even at preclinicals, you may get guys to write big checks, okay? So, you know, it's a very broad classification, right? Between, you know, it all depends on which therapeutic area, which, what is the level of excitement, what's the science looking like, right, at that point in time, right?
Sure. No, that's absolutely right, actually. One question on the Russia business, very strong quarter for us. I just want to understand that, yes, you mentioned about one product as a new launch and one product doing well for us, but it's a large business for us. I know it's been impacted, but still a very decent sized business for us. So this 50% plus constant currency growth, is this just a base effect of last year, or how do you expect this business to do over the year?
So our current thinking is, I mean, the business is really doing well for us at this point. So we anticipate a very good year for Russia. Now, if you're asking me the number will be 50%, probably not. But we think, you know, anywhere north of 25%, right, on constant currency is clearly doable for the Russian business.
What has changed, Glenn? Seriously, is it that, sorry, this is my last question, I'll just follow up on this only, that what has changed in Russia? Is it like using off-take of your old products, volumes pick up there, or the new launches are doing significantly better?
I think there are two or three major launches which we had, products which we launched towards the second half of last year, right, which are really big drivers for the business there, right? And two of them are in the respiratory, one is in the derm space.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Surjit Pal of Prabhudas Leeladhar. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. could you please tell me that what are the key US generic launches you have in FY17 and FY18 other than Zetia?
So, I mean, I cannot comment on anything which is not in the public domain, right? We do not guide to any specific launches other than, you know, what's in the public domain. So, right now it's just Zetia. Which we can talk about.
Right. Could you give us update on where do you stand in nitroglycerin and Velcol? Nitroglycerin and Velcol, where do you stand? I mean, when do you expect this product, or what are the regulatory status in these two products? Because last time which we heard, is that nitroglycerin, your partner had resolved the issues with USFDA and you were expecting. So any update on that? And Velcol, I think FDA came back to you with additional queries. So Any update on these two products?
Nitroglycerin, we are, you know, we could launch any time, right, depending on when the FDA decides to approve the product. As far as Velcol goes, you know, we don't see that as a FY17 launch. It is going to FY18. That's our perspective.
And you have replied all the pending queries in Velcol, or is still pending over there?
Look, we don't comment, but we have nothing outstanding, but we anticipate it will end up being an FY18 launch.
Could you give us any idea about what is the latest status of your approval of nystatin combination which you received in Q1 in US, and whether you have launched it or what is the current size, because it's a limited competition, what we understood?
So we already launched the product. I mean, that's all we can say at this point.
And response-wise?
Sorry?
Response-wise, I mean, market share-wise, what's your sense?
Good. It's been good. Look, Glenmark, most of our products, right, we are pretty successful in gaining at least 20% share on most of our products. So I think the response is good.
Okay.
From the derm portfolio, all our derm launches, right, we're able to get that kind of share.
So do you think it will be one of the drivers along with Mupirocin in coming quarters?
I cannot give you any further visibility, right, on which specific product is going to drive. All I can say is, as a cumulative, you know, the number of approvals that we've got and the kind of launches that we've got on our plate right now and the kind of traction we are getting, we clearly feel that, you know, Q2 onwards, I mean, you should see a strong second quarter, and then from here on, you know, Q3 we launched Zetia, so from here on, the US business should look pretty solid.
Thanks. I have two accounting questions. Could you give a breakup of your other income, which you know, quite high in comparison to your previous quarters, as well as the tax rate 35%? Do you think it will continue? I think because this is your, if I compare your cash tax rate, it is very close to that. So going forward, this 35 will be the benchmark?
Yeah, so coming to your tax rate question, Q1, the tax rate definitely is on the higher side. We do expect this to normalize during the course of the year. So we should end with an effective tax rate of ballpark in the range of 25%. Then coming to your next question in terms of other income, this other income is basically a forex gain on the mark-to-market on receivables.
So how much that will be, or fully, it depends on that?
Predominantly it's MTM.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal of IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Glenn, on the India business, how much of the growth was impacted this year by this quarter by these regulatory issues, and how do we see it going forward?
I mean, I think the India growth is getting impacted because there's a Zeta base effect, right, which was there last year. That coupled with this whole, some of the price control and things like that. I mean, our view is India on a full year will grow north of 15%, right? So, if you see subsequent quarters, you know, once this sitagliptin effect goes away from the numbers, right, which should happen by Q2, Q3 and Q4 should look very strong in terms of reported numbers.
Okay. And secondly, on Brazil, we've been hearing most of the competitors talking about, approval situation improving there, and which is sort of leading to some amount of fillip in growth as far as Brazil is concerned. Are we changing seeing any change for us, our sort of momentum in Brazil?
No, so from our approval process, we are not seeing some strong momentum coming out of Brazil. So Brazil for us still remains, a huge challenge in terms of getting products approved. But I think one of the things we did in Brazil is we did a restructuring, whereby I think the we've been able to cut expenses and I think overall this year we'll pretty much break even in Brazil.
Okay. Okay. And lastly, on the debt, I guess we had some amount of creep in the net debt even in the current quarter. So
yeah.
While Zetia will account for some cash flows which will help us put down the debt, but ex of Zetia, I mean, by when would you see the the core operational cash flows be sort of sufficient to start taking care of our cash? I mean, so we start generating free cash flows incrementally going forward.
So Nitin, this Q1 debt is not something I'm paying a lot of attention to, because I think in subsequent quarters, as the sales go up, right, we are just preparing for the subsequent quarters, right? Q1 is normally our weakest quarter in terms of sales, right? And we will generate a significant amount of cash going forward, even without Zetia. So the core business this year will pretty much break even, right? Without Zetia, will be close to a break even situation without Zetia. That's my perspective, right? And then the Zetia cash will be over and above.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Alankar Garude of Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Glenn, this is Abhishek. A couple of questions specifically on the US side. This is the first quarter we're seeing $100 million plus kind of a number with Crestor and the tea ointment and stuff. You'll head towards around 115, 120 possibly next quarter. And then you have Zetia for the next three quarters. The question is essentially to get what your base business would be post you've exhausted Zetia. So from around 115, 120, once we go ex Zetia in the second quarter of FY18, what's the number on a regular basis? Do we revert back to 120, or you have sufficient launches to push that $120 million or $150 million per quarter number up to around 140, 150?
So, I mean, Abhishek, the question you're asking is impossible to answer, right? Because we don't know during this period how many additional launches will be there and how the market will play out, right? So, all we can say is if we just look at what filings are there and what products are likely to get approved, if all goes well, right, we will be in a situation where even in a post-Zetia environment, right, we don't see a drop-off in the overall sales of the company. I think the overall business will still continue to grow, between 10 to 15% next year, right? Or in a post-Zetia scenario, right, on a 12-month basis, despite not having Zetia. I mean, that's what we think, right?
Okay, then even if we, let's talk about what we know in the public domain. So you'll have, do you expect Welchol to be in the market before Zetia goes?
I wish I knew, yeah, Abhishek. I think these questions, it's impossible to answer, right? I mean, nobody knows when the FDA is going to approve a product and how.
Is there anything pending from your side, Glenn, as far as Welchol is concerned, as you stand today?
As far as we are concerned, I'm not sure whether we have any deficiency outstanding, but we know we are, we are in the first wave of generic launches. That's what we believe, right? As far as Welchol goes. Now, when FDA decides to approve and what additional questions they may ask for as formulas, is impossible to predict.
Okay. And Claire, just to understand the operating leverage that US can possibly bring to your business. Currently, if I look at your costs, you had a bump up in the in your employee costs as well. So assuming a $50 million rise on a quarterly run rate basis in US, and assuming your US sales brings in around the same kind of gross profits that you have, does the gross profit directly go and hit your EBITDA, or you think there are additional costs that will come and possibly rock the margin profile? Because what I'm trying to arrive at is that will a US lever translate into overall EBITDA margin for the company?
Oh, absolutely. I think the US will bring the maximum leverage to the company, right? It's very clear to us, right? And that's why while you may see price erosion in the US market, for us, right, every incremental product we launch is that much incremental sales. Even if it's at a slightly lower margin, it's still additional margin, right, which goes straight to the bottom line, right, without too much of cost associated with it. So I think that will definitely translate into incremental profits for the company going forward.
So, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Alok Dalal of CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi. Glenn, is $45 million still outstanding from Venezuela?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, but Glenn, then till how much time will you wait for this money to repatriate or consider a write-off of this $45 million amount?
Right now, the Indian government is pretty active in terms of trying to work out these swaps, right, oil swaps. So we want to see how how that whole thing plays out, right? I think over the course of this year, we should definitely get some idea or some positive outcome there, you know, as far as the oil swaps go.
Okay, so you'll wait for the entire full year before taking a call on this outstanding amount from Venezuela.
We'll definitely wait at least till we know where this whole Indian government negotiation is going.
Sure. Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal of Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. Just trying to understand the gross margin, why it's down about 250 odd basis points. Would it be largely attributable to Venezuela or the business mix? I was under the impression the branded generics were higher gross margins. So if you could help us clear that doubt, please.
So, Prakash, on the gross margin, definitely there is a contribution from Venezuela because the sales have come down pretty significantly. But I think if you look at it from a year-to-year basis, I think that's what we always tend to guide, that, you know, the gross margins will remain around the 66 to 67% range. So I think it's more a reflection of the entire year is what we would like to guide to rather than guiding from a quarter-to-quarter basis.
So you're saying that the fluctuation that you see normally in the quarter is more normalized now, and this is the run rate that you'll probably see going forward?
That's correct.
Okay. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Prakash.
Yeah, and on the R&D side, could we have a split on the NC and the generics, please?
So we are currently spending about 4.5% on the NC NME side, right? And the remaining is going towards generics, and within that also it's primarily towards the US market.
Okay, and that is likely to continue, that kind of breakup, right?
Yep.
And R&D, again, following up, this is about 10 to 11% is what you have guided.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone who has a question may press star and one. Our next question is from the line of Deep Master of Enam Holdings. Please go ahead.
Hi. Did you make any additions to your field force in India this quarter?
No, there's been no addition to field force.
So what would your count stand at currently?
I think it's about 3,200 sales reps.
Okay. And just on the tax rate, so I just wanted to clarify, would it be 25% for the whole year? Would it trend towards 25% towards the end of the year?
So it will be 25% for the year.
Okay. And would it be possible to share the Venezuela sales for the quarter?
We don't have that number, but it's very small.
Okay. And like you said, so X of Zetia, you'd be in a cash neutral position. And Zetia would allow you to have surplus cash this year. So would that primarily go towards paying down debt?
That's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Alankar Garude of Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Glenn, you recently got approval for this Epiduo gel. Do you have a settlement with Innovator? When exactly do you get to launch this product?
We can't give any timeline, Abhishek, on that.
Is it an FY18 launch? Forget about the exact timeline, but do we see this molecule in market in FY18?
We cannot guide to that, Abhishek.
Is it way off?
No, it's a near-term launch, okay? But that's
perfect. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our last question. I now hand the floor back to Mr. Jason D'Souza for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Inba. Before we close the call, the disclaimer. The document and this call was hosted by Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. The information, statement, analysis made in this document and call describing the company's objectives, projection and estimates are forward-looking statements and progressive within the meaning of applicable security laws and regulation. The analysis contained herein is based on numerous assumptions. Actual results may vary from those expressed or implied depending upon economic conditions, government policies and other incidental factors. No representation or warranty either expressed or implied is provided in relation to this presentation. The presentation should not be regarded by recipients as a substitute for the exercise of their own judgment. With this, we end Glenmark's Q1 earnings call. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.